Hey, today I have a former special operations tier one operator whose career spanned from the end of the Cold War all the way through to the sandbox. He's got some really interesting insights into the war in Ukraine that's going on right now, which we talk about a little bit. And then also, he talks about kind of the current state of where we are. He's become an internet sensation. He inspires tons of guys with things like his Sunday sermon and with his basic dude stuff. These are basic things that that guys, you know, need to know. And of course, it's Pat McNamara that I'm talking about. And he's just a force, man. And what's great about him, he's a real dude. He's very funny. He will give you great insights into, you know, what's important in training, where people are screwing up as far as your own self-protection, where hand-to-hand combat really fits in on that. And it's all from a very unique perspective. But most importantly, he tells a story. You know, he's a real guy and he's had his challenges and how he's overcome his challenges and the responsibility he feels and how he's become this, you know, really not trying to, but has become this incredible mentor for a lot of young guys, you know, who really need guidance right now. And so it's a great story. I think you're going to really enjoy the interview. And again, if you have not experienced Pat McNamara, I'm glad to introduce you to him because he's just a solid dude, funny as hell, and just has great info. So without further ado, Pat, take it away. Thanks so much for doing the interview, man.
All right. Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Everybody got your background on the intro, so they kind of know. But one of the unique things that you and I were just talking about is, before we get into all the fun stuff that I want to talk to you about, you know, you have the unique background of your career spanned not only, you know, the early years of the sandbox stuff that's going on, but you're at the end of the Cold War and you were working on that mission. And that's kind of when I was in too, and I did some time over in Munich. But what are your thoughts on how the Russians are performing? Does it surprise you some of the difficulties they're having? Does it bring back any memories from, you know, that your days of looking at, you know, then the Soviet threat?
You know, it's funny. It brings back memories in that one of the jobs I had during the Cold War was working in former Soviet East Germany, spying on the Soviet army. So it's neat seeing that they're still using a bunch of the same kit, you know, the Ural 4320s and Zil 131s and Beater 80s and T-80 reactives, and how very little of it has been upgraded. You know, they're this is some slippery slope shit right now, you know, because they're a hardy folk. Oh, yeah. And Putin has got, he's got ego. Now, what I don't believe that the Russian troops, for the most part, have vested interest. You know, I don't think that they really give a shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's my take. So it looks as though, and I'm glad for the Ukrainians how they're holding their own. You know what I mean? They've got a lot of national pride, which is cool, because national pride is a great thing. Otherwise, you can lose resolve real fast. And Putin has this momentum where he's playing chess with pawns. You know what I mean? Right. There's no big bold movements, and it's. I think it's a shame that we're not doing more, usins. Like let's say, supplying the Ukrainians with much needed equipment, gear, technology, that kind of stuff. Because I could only speculate, as most people can, but he's going to keep this just inching forward, taking ground, unless of course he stopped. But he's got that momentum. So, it'd be neat to stop him in his tracks, because then he would have to, you know, reinitiate that momentum, which is tough to do. So it's a big mess, but yeah, it brings back some memories.
It's funny, man. You know, the one thing that cracks me up is they've always had a problem, you know, with logistics. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see that that's been an issue. And listen, you know, they will, like you said, Putin's going to keep hammering away, and he'll keep throwing troops at it. And But the resolve is really interesting. That's such a unique thing, and it kind of plays into what you know what I want to talk to you about. Anyways, it's just the idea of that mental toughness and that ability. I mean, you know, for the Ukrainians, it's their home, man. If they lose, then they lose their home, and so that's a whole different mental mindset for people, and that'll force people to step up. But what's interesting is, what was it like to, just on your military career when you kind of made the transition? I always found that the Soviet problem, for the most part, you were still dealing with logic, logical people for the most part. You know, they're violent, they're aggressive, they're all those things, but they weren't necessarily, fanatical in a lot of ways. Whereas when you transitioned into, what we were dealing with in the sandbox and stuff, that was, that goes back centuries of warfare and mentalities that are just really were unfamiliar to us at the time. And now we're very, competent in dealing with that. But was that hard, when you saw people starting to make that transition from, dealing with the Soviet threat? And now, we had Bosnia-Herzegovina, and then you went right into, the sandbox.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because that transition with the Bosnia thing in between was sort of like almost like a conduit, because it gave you the taste of a little bit of Cold War stuff, because you're Eastern Europeans, but also, religious ideology, with the whole Bosnia and, right. The Serbs and Croatia and all that stuff. So it was, I think, an easier transition going from Cold War, Soviet, to Bosnia, to sandbox, because now we're dealing once again with fanatical ideology. And it's so the cultures, from like Soviet era Cold War stuff to working out of Iraq, the cultures are completely different, completely. But that's what you're dealing with too, cultures that have been, ingrained in hard drives of the populace for thousands of years, and you can't change that.
yeah, it's really been interesting, because I remember back, I have an intelligence background, so I was studying Spetsnaz and how they were dealing with the Mujahideen back in the day, and it was really interesting. I mean, just some of the tactics that they used, tactics we wouldn't employ, but it was. I think we were a little arrogant not to kind of look more at the Soviet, experience over there early on, because that can teach you an awful lot of stuff. It was really interesting how that seemed to be completely dismissed at the beginning. And now, talking to a lot of the guys since then, a lot of them have gone back and really gone in-depth studies on, the Soviet experience over there. And, you're seeing some, unfortunately some similarities in how it ended up.
Yeah.
But, what is your opinion on where, and I don't want to get too political. I really want to keep it more, mindset wise. Yep. I'm seeing all my friends. I mean, I've been out a long time, but I still have a lot of friends that are in. It's really depressing to hear some of the stuff that's going on as far as, basic soldiering, basic mental toughness, a lot of the stuff that is being forced upon a lot of these guys that have nothing to do with the mission. And, it's really affecting morale in a lot of ways. And I don't think you can underestimate what that does, to a group, especially in the special operations community. Guys, friends of mine that are now senior enlisted, they can't wait to get out, just because of some of the stuff they're having to put up with.
Yeah, this administration's turning the military back into a social experiment. We got out of that. There's no place for that in the military, and no diss to anybody's sexual orientation. It just doesn't have a place in the military to be confused. Let politicians be confused about genders. Right. They can have it. We're not confused about genders in the military. Genders and race and stuff, there's no confusion. It doesn't need to be a part of it. And it really freaking ticks me off, because it is affecting morale. I'm going to say, the pussification of early recruits as well. You know, there's no place for that. They can be disciplined. It's okay. You know, but it is, I still have my finger on the pulse, and I talk to active military guys, not a lot of young ones. You know, these are more senior guys. You know, I every once in a while I'll ask them, and they just roll their eyes and they go, "Oh man, these are guys in the special ops community."
Yeah.
And that's crap's trickling down to them as well. You know, it's just been saturated recently with the military, with politics and with feel good and wokeism and all of this gender confusion and it's disheartening.
Yeah, well, people don't understand. If you haven't, you know, the other thing that amazed me is I'm a military kid, so I grew up on bases. I had that, you know, I was really lucky, you know, and I was surrounded. And, you know, my dad was deployed all the time, but we had the Marines basically, you know, coaching us and doing all that. So you had like surrogate dads all around. You had really good mentors, you know, and you understood as a young man, you had a really, you understood discipline, you understood criticism, you understood sarcasm. Yep. All those things were built in, and it made you, you know, it made you tougher. And I think really what I forget is what a small part of our population, you know, actually has had any sort of military experience. You know, it used to be 3%. I guess now it's like 1.5% of our population has actually served. And that's a problem, because most people don't understand, because when you and I are talking like this right now, they think somehow we're being, critical of, you know, of sexual orientation or something like that. But the cool thing about the military was it didn't matter. You know, right. I mean, I had guys from all walks of life that I had to work with, and you had to work with them. It didn't matter what their race was, didn't matter anything. It just, you know, can you perform? Especially when you're in the, in something like special operations community, where, you know, it's a meritocracy. And in order to maintain those skill levels and to be like that, I mean, I think that's why you're so, you know, your following is so popular. You know, I mean, it's really interesting to me where, you know, you can't get this anywhere else. And so that's why, like, the Rogans of the world, you know, yourself, you know, Jocko, all these, you guys are all basically providing havens for men to be men. And I don't mean that in a Neanderthal way. I mean that in a really good way. I mean, the work that you do, and I do want to get into your, you know, training.
Yep.
But I can't tell you, I mean, just your humor and how you do, like, you know, your Sunday sermons and your basic dude stuff.
Yeah.
It's funny, but it's not. It's actually right. Skill sets that are lost, man. I mean, you're teaching kids how to tie knots. You're teaching young guys. I mean, my sons, they love you guys. You know, they sit there, all their friends, they love following because they can't get it anywhere else. They're certainly not getting it at school. Mm-hmm. Even like Boy Scouts has been completely decimated. And really the only place you can get this stuff now is online.
And that's where kids get most of their information right now is online. So I may as well leverage that. And it was unintended initially that Sunday Sentinel sermons or basic dude stuff would have a positive effect on the younger generation. I had no idea, but that's where it's hitting home. Because, you know, they're, I think that, let's call them kids, like Generation Zers. I think that they recognize that void, you know, when they see stuff like that. This guy's cool. He's kind of, you know, got a crazy beard. He's a little bit funny, but he's putting out good information. He works out like a man possessed.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to be able to captivate them and keep them on the hook. So it's important, you know, to understand a couple things. One is the attention span of a Generation Zer, of a human being, period, is less than that of a goldfish right now. So you have to be very short, clear, and concise, right? It's like goldfish is 9 seconds, human being is 8 seconds, something like that, you know, before they start swiping right. So you've got to be able to captivate them right away and put out good, clean, short, clear, and concise information that is also entertaining, right? So it's entertainment. But man, what I'm so fortunate to have this platform and to see its growth and to see how many people it has had a positive effect on. I'm very, very fortunate, and it's so fulfilling, you know, so I'm getting a lot out of it too in return, because I get the fulfillment portion of it, you know, because I get notes from and base, I always say basic dude stuff knows no gender, right? So that thing right there, it's a thing that everybody can relate to. You know, a 9-year-old girl, 80-year-old man, a 35-year-old single mom, that kind of stuff. It's for everybody. Because they're more, like you said, you know, it's not teaching men how to be Neanderthals, but healthy men, you know, just healthy, right? So it's
you're
more
making
than just,
them, what you're doing is you're making them be responsible. Like the way you show, it's going to be shit that I grew up with. I mean, right. You know, taking care of your yard, you know, right. Taking out the trash, doing, I mean, but you do it with style. You do it really funny. But you get it across. You also do it really well. That's the other thing too. Like there's no bullshit. It's like, hey, this is how you do it and don't do it half-assed. And that message comes across without it being kind of like, you know, dictatorial. It's more like, hey, you know, if you're going to do it, you're going to do it well. This is how you do it. And, you know, if you don't know how to do it, I'm going to show you.
Right. And it's not, you know, a lot of folks will ask follow-ups. Oh, can you do a class on that? No, I just showed you. If you recognize the void, there's plenty of information out there. I don't need to spend 30 minutes on YouTube showing you how to tie a one rope bridge. You know, I just show you a couple knots in those 8-second chunks. Now, if you want to, if you recognize that as a void, go research it. You know, there's plenty of YouTube stuff out there to research. And I'm not just showing, you know, how to tie knots and build fires, but like etiquette, you know, how to be good to call on your mom, how to be good to your wife.
By the way, your wife is great, man. She knows exactly how to respond to you. It's really cool.
Dude, we make each other the best versions of ourselves. You know what I mean? Yeah there's no doubt about that. So like tomorrow, for instance, I thought of another one because tomorrow is Wednesday and that's when basic dude stuff comes out. I'm going to do a couple grammar lessons even because all this stuff is dying off. You know, like one of the things is handwriting a note. You know, it's dying off. How to read a map, dying off. All these things are like anachronisms now because we're so reliant on technology. So it's also the subliminal manipulation there is don't be lazy. That's the subliminal part, you know. Don't be lazy. Go learn stuff. The more you know, the less you are reliant on others to help you out in a bad situation. So, I don't know some stuff. It's fun to know stuff, you know, and I'm constantly learning. And when you're done learning, man, I think you're done living. You know, being interested makes you interesting as well.
Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, you can turn it on at any time when it's time to get serious and when it's time to, you know, talk about, you know, the violence of action and all that stuff. And you're really good at that as well. But what's interesting is you show that you can be a complete person. You don't have to be just one-sided on that. You know, there's more to it. Like I think a lot of kids get the idea that, you know, you're going to learn to be a real, you know, spec ops badass and stuff, but they don't think about being a complete man. And right. I think you're willing to show that side of things. And that's what makes, I think your platform's, you know, really kind of unique is you're one of the only guys that really, you know, you joke about yourself. You just make it fun for people, you know, to do that. But you also, you know, if they need real information, you're ready to give that. But it's such a really unique balance that you put out. And I think I guess what I'm really finding is I got two sons. I've got an older son, 26, and I've got an 11-year-old. And the 26-year-old kind of missed. He got the tail end of it in college, the woke stuff. But he was able to pretty much grow up, you know, with really good male mentors and it was encouraged and everything. My 11-year-old, man, it is a challenge. I'm going to, you know, I got him into all the right things. And, you know, obviously my friends are a bunch of, you know, maniacs. So that's good. He has good things that way. But it was really funny when you say it's not gender specific because when I'm preparing for this, I was looking at some of your stuff. I got twin 8-year-old daughters. And you were out doing a workout and you had your hammer and, you know, I don't have that. I got other stuff. I got maces and stuff like that, but they've never seen a guy with a hammer. And right. They just were fascinated. Daddy, what's he doing with that hammer? And they thought it was so cool.
Yep.
And they were watching, you know, the fact that you were working outside and you were doing that. It's just such a good, And the fact that you're not 20, you know, the right. fact that you're out there, you know, just still getting after it after mm-hmm. all these years. And, you know, and you've had, it's not like you've had just an easy life. You know, you've been really honest in other interviews about, you know, you've had your ups and downs and stuff, and it's been tough. And I think that's cool that you share that, because I think a lot of times in the community, you know, I remember me growing up, I had a lot of guys, you know, that were in spec ops community, and, you know, you kind of hero worship them as a young guy. And then you realize, you know, some of the guys, you know, commit suicide, they just suppress all of this, you know, all the issues that they have. And, you know, some of them take it out in drinking, some of them take it out and just, you know, just being reckless and stuff like that. And of course, the other thing too, that nobody really knew about, you know, at least when I was going through, was, you know, the effect of, you know, traumatic brain injuries that everybody was getting. And we just kind of thought was normal and behavior. I think what's really cool is, you know, you've said, hey, listen, you're going to have tough times. You're going to get through it. And what I think men really need to understand is, dude, get moving. You know, one of the simplest ways you can start changing your outlook on everything is just get moving and just start, you know, just do a basic workout, do something that gets your blood going. It just changes. It literally changes, you know, your whole being. And I just don't see that message being put out enough, you know?
You pegged a couple of things. I have, the amount of correspondence I get from guys is ridiculous. You know, either, hey, thanks because you helped me out of this dark place, or I need assist. You know, can you help me with something? Yeah. And I get a lot of those, and I'm kind of, I could read between the lines pretty easily. And I'll know who's worth spending time on and who is just a perpetual pity party.
Right.
You know, 'cause some people are like that. They just want to feel sorry for themselves forever, and they're beyond helping. But it's the opposite. It's the guy who doesn't say much and doesn't pity party, but he's got issues. You know, there's darkness in his life. And a lot of times I say that, I say, hey, come work out with me in my driveway. You know, because the cool thing about the driveway too, I never knew how much fun that would be until, you know, lockdown. And then I built my driveway gym and I went, man, I'm never going to a gym again, ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I noticed that. I haven't seen you back at the gym.
You know, when it's 38 and raining, it sucks. Yeah. And when it's 100 degrees and humid, it sucks. But I'm still going to do it. But there's something wholesome about it too, you know?
Yeah.
And the other thing that the driveway gym does, when you don't have a lot of equipment, it encourages imagination, you know, problem solving. You have to think, well, damn, man. What am I going to do today with the limited stuff that I have that I didn't do, you know, recently, because I don't want to replicate what I just did. I want to keep it interesting, because that's another component of it, right?
Yeah.
So the feed, keeping it interesting, that draws people to it. So they look at it and they go, man, that is interesting stuff. That is a really, really unique way to work out. And like you said, he must be doing something right, because that dude's been banged up 22 years of special ops, and he's 57 freaking years old. He ain't no spring chicken. So he's got to be doing something right. So I pass that on to people and, you know, encourage that workout or encourage them to get moving. Because like you said, and to your point, it is so freaking important to get the gears in motion. If you have any mental health issue whatsoever, that's number one, right? Diet and exercise, those two combined. To bring yourself out of that rut, diet and exercise. Those are the big ones right there. And I say that all the time. Hey, man, get moving. You don't need to do what I'm doing. Go for a walk out in the woods. Start small. But you need these little victories, you know, small wins. But you need to chain them together too. You know, you need win after win after win after win to get out of that rut. And then, you know, up the ante a little bit the next time, you know, bring on the heat just a little bit more. And then pretty soon, you know, it's, it becomes, you know, self-perpetuating. It's just going to happen. You can't live without it, because it becomes your new normal and you reinvent yourself. You know, you've established this new normal, which is so neat when people do that, you know, and if I can't, however I can do it, I'm going to keep helping people establish a new normal, you know, or reestablish themselves, reinvent themselves.
Yeah, I remember listening to, I don't know if it was Rogan, but you're talking, what was really interesting, you got to that point to where you just said, fuck it, and you just went for a run.
Yep.
And that was the start. And that was the start of the transformation of where you were. You know, you're in a real dark place, and that was the key. And I could totally relate to that. Because every time, that was one thing as a military kid that I didn't realize how freaking valuable it was, but we were never allowed, anytime, you know, you got into a pity party or something, man, it was like lean and rest. It was pushups. It was, you know, the Marines kept you going. They didn't put up with that shit. Right. And it was good as a kid, because that was always been my outlet, was physical training. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I pass that on as much as possible to people, but you do it in such a cool way, because like you said, I think you get a lot of guys that are, I don't know what it is. I mean, you're doing what most people would look at and say, my God, that's an insane workout. I can't do that. But you don't do it in a way that it makes them feel like something's not attainable. You're really good about coming back to, hey, just start, just do something. You know, it doesn't have to be crazy like this. And the other thing is the garage gym. The other thing that I love about it is it takes away everybody's fucking excuse not to do stuff.
Because exactly. They don't have, yeah. Mitigate excuses. That's a thing that I've been doing for a long time, is trying to mitigate excuses. You know, it doesn't take a lot of equipment. It doesn't take a lot of time. It doesn't, you know, it's hard work sucks, but not everybody's cut out for it. You know what I mean? And like one of the things you said is a motto of mine, just show up. Like, so for instance, right now I have some health issues and I have a lack of enthusiasm. That's one of the side effects of these health issues that I have. So I have a lack of motivation, lack of enthusiasm, and there's a lot of chronic pain. But I have the process in place, and I just show up initially. Just show up. Because as soon as we're done with this interview right here, that's where I'm going, to my driveway. It's on my whiteboard. You know, I've scheduled it for the day. And now because it's on my whiteboard, well, looks like I have to do it, because I do capitulate to my whiteboard. You know, my whiteboard tells me what the day's events are, and I have to hit each one of these things. But yeah, man, just showing up is the first part. And the workout here, here's another thing. I get on these soapboxes and go freaking ping, 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 ping. But the gym thing, a lot of us, what happens is we get into sort of a routine. You know, we're doing the same thing the same way every time. So, one of the things that we don't want to fall victim to is that routine, because routine is the playground of a dull mind. And if you're doing the same thing all the time, you're not going to recognize voids, you know, and you're going to fall into this rut of complacent adaptation where you're not going to make gains because you're just doing the same shit over and over and over. So it's good to change shit up. And for those I'm an idea guy. I have imagination. You know, so for those that don't have a lot of imagination, I provide ideas for them. And most of my followers get it. They're like, hey, thanks for this. I'm doing this one today. This thing that you just put together. Ooh, that's a great movement. Now I can incorporate that tomorrow because today I did this, you know? So, and it's fun doing that. It's fun. It keeps me interested too. And I am very, very grateful for my fan base, because on days when I'm not motivated, I know they're looking for a video.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn it, man, I'm obligated.
Yeah, they keep you accountable, man.
Yeah, they are. They really are. Yep.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. You know, the other thing is people think, oh, every day is a great day. No, it's not, man. It's a process, and you got to work it. And I think, you know, the fact that you said you whiteboarded it, I tell people all the time, you got to schedule everything in. Just make it, you know, just make it part of your day, and you get going. The reason I'm so motivated about this is because I've never seen such a lack. You know, I guess it's because I have young kids right now, and I see the majority of them, and I see there's just no direction, and there's no, the physical education isn't there. You see a lot of problems because kids don't have physical activity, and it's not encouraged. And a lot of the parents never had it. Mm-hmm. And it's not like an end all be all, but it is an important part, especially for young males, because they have such excess energy and they need positive outlets for it, you know, and you just don't see a lot of that. And I think that's why, like, my son was totally psyched. I told him, you know, I was interviewing you today, and they're like, he and all his buddies are all totally psyched now.
Right.
Because they're, you know, they think you're the, they love your beard, dude. It's the beard. They just,
yep,
they look, right, and they look, and you know how to profile it and do everything. Yep. It's really,
oh, yeah, yeah.
It's really good, man. Oh yeah.
Yep.
So that part of it, I think is super important. And now let's get into your tactical training, you know, that you've done over the years. And, you know, I know right now, you know, everybody's out there, you know, training stuff, which I think is good. I think, you know, 11 million new gun owners are out there. God knows how many of them are actually getting any sort of training.
Yeah.
But what, in your experience, when you started training outside of military and law enforcement, and you started to train civilians, what did you notice were some of the issues? And what, you know, when you look at somebody that's coming to you to learn self-protection, you know, a total thing, which includes firearms training,
right,
on your aspect, what approaches do you see that you had to deal with the civilians that were kind of not anything you had to deal with military and law enforcement?
A couple of them. So the guys that I would train, so civilians, when I started doing open enrollment classes, these are guys who take classes. You know, I'm not the only one they go to. They take classes.
Right.
A lot of the, sometimes, you know, there's a first timer, hey, this is my first class. Right. But they've also been on YouTube a lot and have watched trainers. So right. they're coming, a lot of these guys are coming with baggage, you know, shit that I have to unscrew.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Oh yeah.
So they're coming with baggage and training itis, you know, so like bad habits.
Or seminar junkies.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Or they have range theatrics, you know, that kind
right.
of thing.
Right.
And it makes perfect sense to them because they drank the Kool-Aid of the prior instructor. And I would say, well, let's think about this now. I know this makes sense to you, but would you do that? Would you do that? Would you do that? Probably not. And then I'd kind of lay out a scenario for them. And they go, holy crap. Now they just had an epiphany. It's like, man, I thought this made sense the whole time. And you just told me it didn't. And I agree with you. It doesn't make sense. Now I have to rewrite. I have to reprogram. The other thing that they would, that civilians initially, and they're not as bad now. And I love training civilians. I love it. I want to create as many assets out there as possible so I have fewer liabilities. You know, right. I want to create as many small B Batmans as possible.
Yeah.
That's what I consider I'm Batman with a small B. And how much of that can I pass on? Man, I don't know, but I want to pass a lot of it on. Another thing that the civilians would bring to the table, their baggage was hardware versus software. So they had all the kit and everything and the cool guns, but their training sucked or yeah. their training methodology sucked. But they had all the kit, you know, from head to toe. I mean, just like kitted up large. Better kit than I had when I was in special ops.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, damn, bro. Holy crap. So, I mean, you got some disposable income because I know what that costs right there.
Oh, yeah.
But so those two things, but always fun, you know, and they're always very attentive because they're paying for a course out of their own money,
yeah.
out of their own pocket. You know, so, yeah.
Well, it's different also to training. I know, and I'm really glad to see it. Like it used to be most civilians would do some form of, if they're going to do anything with some form of competitive shooting, you know, maybe three gun or something like that, they train for. What I really like to see is a lot of guys in the community like yourself that are, you know, showing people, hey, listen, if you're using this thing to save your life, and you're gonna be shooting in a real environment, then you have to train in far more realistic, you know, you're not gonna just train in this little box where you're, you know, punching holes in a target. You have to realistically, you know, understand how you're gonna use this weapon. And the other thing that everybody really, I think, is coming an epiphany in the last 5 years that I've seen is people are really understanding what it means to be responsible for every round that comes out of that gun.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, and you know, and I want to believe that that way back when I started that whole thing about accountability, because I was the opposite of most instructors where you a 2-day round count,
Yep.
You know, 2-day round count for a pistol course with most instructors is like 2,000 rounds. For me, 800. Right. Because we're accountable for every single round that we fire. And we're working for those rounds because we're moving into position. We're moving behind cover. There's a lot of turns. Another thing that I do on the range that a lot of guys don't is it's kind of a 360 rule. There's no 180. You know, I can't stand that when people say, you're breaking the 180. Dude, where's the freaking 180 in the Walmart parking lot?
Right.
And then, you know, just the flat range rules. I take the flat range rules out of training. Yeah. You know, like when people are sprinting backwards, once again, try that in the Walmart parking lot, which I call the epicenter for disaster planning at 11 at night. You're going to trip over a parking embankment and then you get your chiclets kicked in. Yep. So, you know, just little stuff like that. How they receive it is extremely positive. I mean, I don't go right into that day one. I feel everybody out, you know. Yeah. Day one, we're flat range. You know, we're flat range, we're straight ahead. Day two, we're moving. We're moving, we're becoming omnicognizant, you know, shifting gears, changing hands, turning angles, all that stuff.
Yeah, you know, you actually brought up a good point that I failed to bring up earlier, man. You've been doing this for a long time, man. Yep. I mean, you've been doing this and you know, pre-social media. And that's really interesting because, you know, I saw the old Panteo tapes and all of that you've done over the years and you know, all the product you've been putting out. And yeah, you were one of the first guys that really were getting people to move. Your lectures, you know, on some of those old tapes, your lectures are fantastic, you know.
Oh, cool.
And you were one of the first guys to start making people think that way. Yeah. It's nice when a guy can come out of the community that you came out of and give accessible information to new people. Meaning, if I tell people all the time, if the only thing you got out of a course is saying, man, that instructor was badass, you know, it's like, okay, great. But what did that do for you? Rather than, hey, you know, I started here and by the end of the course, he got me here. You know, like verifiable, you know, skill sets that you bring up, and you were really good about, you know, talking about, you know, along those lines, and you're very realistic too. You're able to bring military style, motivating lectures, and they were entertaining, but really, you know, I can't think of anybody else that was really doing that,
right.
You know, back then. And of course, a lot of people now, that's kind of what they're doing. And hey, credit to them, that's fine.
Yeah,
but you definitely should, you know, let people, you know, realize that you've been doing this for a while. Yeah. And you've been thinking about it for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. My, I don't know when I first started doing YouTube, maybe 06. And then I realized, holy shit, this is a platform where people want gun stuff. Let me up the ante here. Yeah. So I started doing, you know, adding in all the physical stuff, you know, and a lot of it was, you know, outrageous just for the theater. You know what I mean? Like pushing my pickup truck and climbing a rope and, you know, doing box jumps in the bed of my truck and throwing 90 pound sandbags and support hand shots at 50 yards on steel. So, you know, a lot of it was just, me being ridiculous, but people loved it. You know, and they thought, you know what? I'm not going to do this on the range, but a facsimile thereof. I could recreate something and drag, do a buddy assist drag or, over the shoulder carry while I'm shooting, that kind of thing. Yeah. And yeah, it spread like wildfire, there was nobody else on the interwebs doing that stuff.
Yeah. And you got good instincts, dude, because you know, what's so funny is they sit there and say, oh, well, you know, that's just for eyeballs. Mm-hmm. Well, fucking Tim Ferriss, one of his biggest videos ever, like, you know, it was how to boil an egg.
Right.
He did this thing on a quick egg and it got millions of freaking views, you know, whereas a lot of his real serious stuff didn't get as much, but it brought a lot of new people in. And, you know, whether it was intentional with you, I mean, that was really a smart move, is to get people to pay attention and then they're going to check out the rest of your content.
Right.
And that's super important. I mean, you have to grab people's attention, and you have to give them something that they want before you can actually provide them what they need. And, right. And, you know, I think you got a really good balance that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, it's pretty neat because I like to act on epiphanies, you know, but I always ask my bride first because I have a lot of ideas and she's kind of like my executive assistant. She's a lot younger than I am, but she's the responsible adult in my life.
I understand.
So I always, you know, run crap by her. Like, hey, what do you think this about this idea? Like Sunday Sentinel sermon, where I take snippets from my book and, you know, put out a 30-second PSA on this stuff. And I'm, you know, I'm bated breath because I'm in love with the idea. Please say yes. And she'll go, that's a good idea. But there's been a lot of times where she looks at me and she'll go, no, no, no. And I go, yeah, you're right. But you know that, like, I ran the Basic Dude Stuff idea past her one night and she went, that is a good idea. Yeah. And that detonated. That went crazy.
Oh, yeah. You well, listen, I'm telling you, you hit a nerve with that, man, because like I said, everything male is just being, and I'm, you know, it's ridiculous, but it's being, you know, attacked basically. Yep. You know, for guys to be everything we do is, you know, labeled under the idea of toxicity. And to that account, now you've had some issues too with social media. You've had some things that have been squelched. Have you found, when did you start seeing, you know, the gun stuff and some of that stuff starting to be squelched on, you know, with your channels and stuff?
With YouTube, the gun stuff a couple of years ago, you know, where they demonetize.
Right.
But the, you know, the IG thing, man, that really got me thinking, you know, when the banning started.
Yeah.
And when they shut me down in 20, it was like August of 20, they shut the channel down.
I remember that.
And the best way as it was explained to me is the big media, the internet wants people to be, they want dependence.
Right.
You know, they want subservience. People like me are a danger to that because I'm teaching people how to be better people. So I'm a danger to that, to them being subservient and them being dependent on these things and social media feeds and all that. So, spooky stuff, man, you know, real spooky stuff. And, you know, the conspiracy theorist in me kind of rears its ugly head every once in a while. And I start going down a rabbit hole thinking about other things. But I'm like, you know, it is what it is. And I guess I just have to make the best of this crazy ass freaking media world do the best with it that I can.
Yeah. I don't think people understand kind of the insidious nature of what they do. So, you know, we started growing, you know, exponentially, just organically growing really, really fast. And then what happens is inevitably your most popular videos, the ones that are really cranking. And again, none of my stuff was gory or anything like that. But what they'll do is they do this really slick thing where they say, hey, we looked at your video. You don't have to take it down. But what we're going to do is we're going to age restrict it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I'm thinking, hey, that's great, because any advertiser would love the fact that nobody under 18 is going to see, you know, this video, especially for a lot of the products that, you know, they'd sell on my thing. But what they don't tell you right away is, oh, that also means you're demonetized.
Right.
And so that's how they really try to take in there. And all of a sudden, your subscriptions are going crazy. And then all of a sudden, you just see just all of a sudden, the numbers just start dropping. Mm-hmm. And it's really weird how it happens. And, you know, yeah, you can sound like a conspiracy theorist, but it's the reality. I mean, I can't tell you how many guys I've talked to across the board that have had similar experiences like that. And when you got kicked off of IG, that was amazing because you were cranking, you know, during that time and you just disappeared.
Yeah, just vanished. Oof. Thankfully, you know who got it back up for me was Joe Rogan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was awesome when he did. And he loves you, man. I love that interview.
Yeah.
Done with him fun. And stuff.
He's a good cat, man. He's a good cat. He's doing.
Hey, man, he's really the only. He's become powerful enough to where he can go against the grain. He can bring in people like you. He can bring in people like, you know, Jacko and people like that. And he can, you know, he can support them. And people that are getting squelched, he can bring them back to life. You know, and voices that need to be heard. And that's cool. It's great to have one area. You know, you always wonder, are they going to finally get him?
Right.
But, you know, right now he seems pretty, pretty dominant. And so it was cool that he did that for you and brought up, but, where do you see, like, what, you know, how have you enjoyed the transition? Like, you know, going, like, 'cause we're about the same age and I've been doing my stuff for a long time, and I like the new generation, like my instructors and everything. I like to see the new guys, you know, kind of taking over. Are you getting to a point to where you're really kind of enjoying passing on the information and then not having to be the, you know, the action guy all the time and doing that? I mean, you still can do it, obviously. I mean, you're keeping yourself in top, you know, shape that way. But hey, man, you know, we all are paying the toll for our years of abusing our bodies. Mm-hmm. And, how are you handling that? How are you handling the transition for this stage of your life?
Yeah, I've slowed down a bunch. You know, COVID was, now granted, I know that a lot of people got hurt right during the 2020. Yep. Financially, they got sick. They have residual problems because they get, you know, because Corona jacked them up. But a lot of guys can relate to my experience with the lockdown as well. Is like, man, that was an awesome reset for me. I needed that. I had no idea how bad I needed it, but my job was literally killing me, you know. Yeah. My work, because my workload, my op tempo was through the roof. Between 2010 and 2019, I was doing 4 courses every single month and on a plane for most of them.
Yep.
So, you know, you get that back on Monday, health, you have Tuesday and Wednesday to you know, take care of chores and to do all your admin crap and to send out certificates of training and then do maintenance on Thursday and then pack up again on Thursday night to fly again Friday. And it was just nonstop like that. And in 2020, I remember looking at my calendar, my wall calendar, and going, ugh. I was just done. I was done. I mean, like done. And I was going, oh my God. Because I was in this vicious cycle of events, you know, where I was sort of like robbing Peter to pay Paul. So I needed to keep the wheel going the whole time, you know. Yeah. Just keep it going and fill the calendar. And then it caught up to me and I went, oh man, I can't do this. I don't know how I could sustain this type of, you know, op tempo. And then lockdown happened. And I went. And then I generated two new businesses that I could do right here in my office.
Huge.
And then cut back on my workload, you know, of courses. Yep. I mean, this year I only posted up 8 courses, open enrollment for this year. I posted them last August. They sold out in 2 weeks. But I've opened up my calendar for private classes because there's a lot of, you know, like father and son or husband and wife or, you know, a group from a church security or a synagogue security who want to come to get private training.
Hey, how crazy is that? How much that's exploded?
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many security. Yeah, it's awesome. And it's great. And they're great people to work with.
Mm-hmm. I worked with 12 Jewish guys from the Manhattan area. Mm-hmm. And they were part of 160 security man force who are, you know, securing all the synagogues up in that area.
Wow.
Like, you guys are bad. And they were good. I mean, they obviously had a lot of training in the past as well, because damn, they were freaking on it like a bonnet. But kudos to them, you know. Kudos. Yeah. But yeah, so to answer your question, I am really enjoying slowing down and imparting the knowledge piece of it. yeah, and I don't have to go crazy anymore. You know, I don't have to run my ass off and do, you know, crazy physical stuff on the range. I don't have to do that anymore. It's more about imparting knowledge and kind of massaging and honing my craft, which is teaching. I love doing that. Teaching is something that I love doing, and it's the best compliment I get from a class is, dude, your teaching style, because of your teaching style, I was able to comprehend this in such a fashion where I heard the same thing before from somebody else, but it wasn't palatable to me. You know, how you presented it, I went, oh, that's what the guy meant.
Yeah.
So yeah, I love that part of it.
Yeah. And that's a sign. That's one thing I really appreciate about, you know, what I've watched of your stuff is you're very intuitive with your classes, you know, and you can figure out what they're getting, what they're not getting. That's a sign to me of a good instructor. Somebody that just sits there and has their rote, you know, this A to Z, this is how we're doing it. I don't care. If you're a good instructor, you'll look at it and you'll say, okay, they're not getting this. I'm going to deliver it this way. You get it wrong and you get them there. But you don't have to get them there, you know, the same way. In every class can be different. You know, I see that all the time. But it's fun to watch another instructor that gets that, and mm-hmm. and I've really appreciated that about, you know, your teaching style. And you're really good at incorporating stories, and, you know, to get a principle across to people, and making it fun for people to learn. You know, what is, you know, for a lot of people, very intimidating information.
Yep. And you want, when you're in that podium slot, you want to be the right person who's going to say the right thing to the right person at the right time. And training has to be, it can't be rigid. You know, you can't open up a book of some bullshit arbitrary standards and say, boom, 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 step one. Boom, boom, boom. You know, it's got to be malleable. You know, you want to have so much curriculum that you could adjust it on a fly and you go, you know what, based on what the group's doing, and I'll even tell them that too. I'll say, you know what? I was going to do this thing, but collectively, we suck at this. So I have this drill that's going to help us collectively, because I'll throw myself into the mix too, you know? Right. So that way I'm not pointing the finger at like three or four people.
Yeah.
It's like, collectively, we suck at this. And they'll go, yep, we do. 100%. So, but it's nice to have been in the game for so long that, you know, you could just make adjustments to the curriculum on the spot, on the fly. And sometimes I don't need to tell them or don't want to tell them. And it's transparent to them. They have no idea. They don't know that I just adjusted the curriculum. No freaking idea whatsoever. And sometimes that adjustment is just maybe yardage. You know, a drill that's at 15, I'm like, nope. It's going to be disheartening for this class. I'm doing this drill at 10, you know, this bullseye drill, because whoo, damn, bro, I ain't up to par.
Yeah. But you don't crush the confidence, you know, right. And you get there. That's so important. And they'll get to 15, you know, yep. They'll do it, but mm-hmm. That's really cool. Where do you see combatives working into, you know, a self-protection plan, especially when you're incorporating firearms and stuff? Do you see many people doing it right? Are there some, because I've seen you do some combatives, you know, drills and work. I saw what you do with Clint and in the book and all that stuff. Yep. But how do you see those interacting? And what do you think about the current state of spec ops, which is really, really, you know, they've really put a lot more into it than in the past. Mm-hmm. But it does seem to be very heavily skewed towards like BJJ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're talking combatives. So we better be careful, because people get, get poopy pants about combatives.
Oh yeah.
So we all have opinions, and even, you know, the most talented guys, a lot of times they'll go, yeah, you're right. yeah. Or you ain't wrong. Right. Not that I'm right, but yeah, you're not wrong. So one of the things is I always tell people, like in a Sentinel class, that just because we have a gun does not mean that we are armed. Mine is a final weapon. All else is supplemental. Now, and then I tell them, hey, a confrontation on the street is way more likely to go physical than it is lethal. So you have to know something. And I get asked, hey, what's the best style? And I'm like, I don't know, whatever one you're good at, bro.
Yeah.
What can you do? You know, it's not about the style. It's about tenacity. Can you use it? You know, do you have chutzpah? You know, do you have moxie? Because it does, if you don't know anything, but if you have moxie, you're more dangerous than somebody who is a black belt and does katas and could break boards in a dojo, but has never gotten punched in the nose.
Yeah.
So one, you know, with in respect to the, cause I've had this, not argument, but debate with the guys who are adamant about BJJ. I go, well, in a street fight, when I'm confronted with three guys, which one do I BJJ first? And they look at me like, three? I said, yeah, because this is an octagon. There's going to be more than one. Yeah. So which one do I BJJ first? Now, nothing against, I love it. I'm a wrestler. I'm a grappler. I'm ashamed that I don't have a lot of BJJ behind me or any kind of jiu-jitsu, because damn, that stuff is badass. It really is. But I'm going, you know, if I am the agent in charge of my own executive protection detail and I have my bride with me, or let's say small children, I need to be able to bash and go.
Right.
I don't want to be tangled up on my back with somebody in the guard. You know, right. There's no freaking way. So I want a ballistic micro fight. I want to throw punches and bunches and achieve separation and get the hell out of there. So to me, that's a primary, you know, that's a big primary for me. And I tell people, you need to know something, right? Something. You can't just assume that because you have a gun, that's going to protect you.
Yeah.
You need to know something with your hands and your feet. Even if that is just tactical deception and running away. Yep. You know, something as simple as that, getting the hell out of there. But it's a very slippery slope topic, because it's emotionally driven with a lot of guys. Guys become they're emotionally attached to a style.
Yeah.
And you got to be careful when you talk about it.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that is just overall. So my wife's a deputy chief out here at, in Metro and, for the police department out here in Vegas. And, she heads up Homeland Security. So she's got SWAT, K-9, everything. She's street cop. She's multiple shootings and she's a badass, you know, martial arts and stuff. She's great. When she was at the academy, we first got together when she was a trainer at the academy, and man, and I know that I talked to my buddies in the military. It's the same thing. We got generations of kids coming up that literally have never put hands on each other.
Never had a nose bloody.
Never had. I mean, which is so foreign to me. I mean, you know, military kids, you're moving every 2 to 3 years anyways. You get fights in all the new schools. I mean, that was just the norm. Plus you're boxing all the time. You're wrestling all the time. Mm-hmm. It's just part of the, you know, there's an outlet for that, especially for males. But it's a real problem with, there's two things. It's a real problem that the kids don't have any physical ability, and they're going into neighborhoods where that's really like the soul of the last bastion of physical violence. I mean, you know, these neighborhoods, these kids, you know, in a lot of the lower income neighborhoods, they grow up with violence. They're very adept with violence. They know how to use violence. And now you've got people policing them who are coming in who aren't, you know, from those neighborhoods. And the other thing is the fact that their communication style, I mean, another thing that makes a really good cop or a really good operator is you can talk to people, you can de-escalate, you can do stuff. These kids are buried in their texting all the time and stuff. They don't have that communication skill. Right. And this isn't an old guy saying, oh, gee, the new generation. Listen, it's not going away, but it's a real problem when you're asking somebody to do something where you're going to have to cross the physical plane on somebody. And it's really interesting to see that literally some of these kids at the academy, it's the first time they'd done anything with any sort of physical combative type situation where they got hit.
Yeah, right. And that's in a controlled environment where there's no malice.
Exactly.
You know, there's no malice, or there's no intent to freaking curb stomp you after I knock you out.
Exactly.
There's none of that. Yeah. So it's not dangerous, but they're still like, I mean, looking through a straw as soon as they get popped on the beak in training. Boop, yeah. Little pop on the beak. Yeah. And it's not an old man thing, because even my wife could say the same thing. She could say that. 31 years old, because the 90s was the last decade for us being 90s was the last decade where people still talk to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were not in comms with somebody for 3 or 4 days, nobody would give a shit.
Yeah.
Now, if you're not returning a text in 10 minutes, it's like, oh my God.
I know. They're pissed.
Where's that text? Like, I texted you 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
But yeah. So then, you know, it's, so even people in their 30s can say it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy, man. It's just, it's interesting to see this. And what's fun at this stage of the game is passing. You know, I see you passing on this information. it's probably like, I think probably one of the things that, that you'll never realize, and I'm sure you've heard this before, is how many people that you don't hear from that you've influenced, you know, and how many people you've changed, you know, and got them on the right direction, you know, with stuff like that. Because I think, you know, if people understand that, hey, your brain is your, you know, primary weapon, everything else is supplemental. And you really understand that, you know, once you understand violence and once you understand what it can do, dude, you start making way better choices in your life, you know, and you can minimize the chance that you have to do it. The better trained you are, you know, the better decisions that you should be making. And it can actually, you know, understanding violence and understanding how to, you know, perform does not make you violent. You know, it just makes you competent. And I think there's a real misunderstanding. There's, I think there's such a stigmatization of physical violence, training for physical violence, that we, the only people that really have access to it, you know, free and clear are the predators. And that sucks, you know? And so voices like yours are really important that people need to hear that, hey, it's okay to train. It's okay to be this way. And by the way, you can still be a really super great responsible citizen. And I think you balance it really well with all of the different ways you communicate with people on your platforms.
Yeah. Like I said, I am extremely privileged and honored to have found myself in this position. The amount of correspondence, like I said, is crazy, you know, and thank you for this. Thank you for that. You've helped me in this. And I'll say to Rebecca sometime, I'll like, damn, man, I have no idea what I'm doing. She goes, just keep doing it. Because you know why? Because I think people are genuinely craving genuine.
Yeah.
And authentic. Yeah. Because there's so much fake right now, you know? Yeah. So they're craving this authenticity of a human being. And, you know, sort of like, you know, the Mike Rose of the world, you know, that genuine. That's why he was so popular with Dirty Jobs.
Yeah.
It's like, dude, man, that guy, after seeing all these years of fake, now you got this genuine freaking cat on TV, you know, with this reality TV show. But,
dude, he's helped so many kids get a trade.
Right.
And truly, you know, avoid having these huge college debts.
Right.
And yeah, he single-handedly is one of the guys that brought back the trades.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, I mean, that's, you know, on a smaller level, you know, I'm doing those things of getting back to the simpler life, learning the basic skills, you know, learning how to protect yourself. And like you said, you know, it's cool. Learning how to protect yourself is cool. And you're not just doing it for yourself, but man, if you got little kids, you know, you owe it to them. You have to be the agent in charge of your own executive protection detail, which is such a fun series in itself. Yep.
Oh no, that's outstanding. I mean, and it gets guys thinking like, hey, yeah, I'm responsible for my family. You know, and teaching people how to back in, you know, their car and be ready. Just, it sounds so freaking basic, but it's changed. Like my son saw me doing it for years and, you know, I'd explain it to him and stuff, but you know, doesn't matter what I say. As soon as you did it, now he's back in his car.
And it's cool.
You know, they never listened to, you know, to the dad. They always listen to something. I always find all my buddies to deliver the messages I need delivered.
Right.
Hey man, to close this out, I'm going to throw a curveball on here. And because of the relationship that I see that you got a great relationship with your wife. Here's talking to guys in the military. I could say guys in general, but particularly in the military, particularly in the special operations community, I've seen amazing guys, just incredible dudes, absolutely destroy themselves with the wrong relationship. What's your take on how important, if you're going to get married, if you're going to be in there, how important is it to make sure it's the right one? And how important is it to make sure if you get the wrong one, you get out?
Yeah. Man, you know, because I've made mistakes in the past and the mistakes were, ignoring red flags because you're smitten, you're smitten. And you see those red flags and you go, it's probably not a big deal. You know, if you're dating somebody and if you have arguments while you're dating them, it ain't going to freaking work. It's not going to work. If you're having arguments or if there are like suspicious thoughts, you know, if your the partner you're dating is suspicious of you, that it's only gonna get worse when you're married.
Yeah.
You know, so man, you know, I tell guys, hey, don't be in any rush. I mean, I was 48 years old when I found my right person, when I found my person. And I had to start life all over again. But see, I paid the price because I got into a relationship. There were red flags. And now there was time invested, 16 years worth. And it got really, 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 really bad the last 5 or 6 years. And damn, that's a lot of that's an investment. So I tell folks, you know, because people ask me marital advice or relationship advice, and I'm hard love. I don't say shit like, well, give it another chance and, you know, try this and this and this. You know, if they read me on to what's been going on, I'll say, hey, you don't have any kids with them and you're not married. Get out.
Get out. Yep.
Get out now before you make a commitment. And now you're locked into this, because I would hate to see a good guy or a good gal become unhappy, you know, for a long duration of time. If I, you know, especially if I could intervene and say, man, you know, think about this, think long and hard about it. Think, you know, you're in this for years. How much better is this going to get? It's probably not going to get that much better. You know, it's probably going to get worse. Now, for those who are, you know, already married, I tell them, you know, fight the good fight, go to marriage counseling, see if you could rekindle whatever it was that you had in the first place. Don't get complacent. Don't accept mediocrity. Don't look like a slob. Don't say, well, the hell with it. I'm married. I could just let myself go now. You know, fight the good fight, man. Try to stay in it. Because I did that even in my horrible relationship. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do everything possible to mitigate having to go through the divorce process. It didn't work, though. But I stuck with it for years of being absolutely freaking miserable.
Yeah. Yeah. And listen, that's the one thing I always laugh with my son. I go, you know, just, you know, any advice I give you, do the exact opposite and you'll be fine.
Right.
You know, but in all seriousness, I mean, the reason I bring it up, and people are going, what the hell are you bringing this up for? It's the number one thing where I've seen guys get into, unnecessary, you know, violence. I've seen them get into really bad situations. Guys that were stellar individuals, I've seen them ruin careers. Mm-hmm. And not just, and women too. This is not gender. You know, I've seen women. Yep. A lot of my female friends have just been in these shitty relationships forever. But the one thing, I guess, it gives you perspective at this age. You don't get those years back, man.
Right.
You know, and I think it's really important because you just, you know, listen, not all of them can get bad, but man, when it gets really bad, you can end up, you know, you can end up doing something that you're going to really regret.
Yep.
And I like to catch people before that, but I just caught that on one of your interviews, the tail end of something. I just wanted to ask your opinion on that because I think it's a dirty little secret that a lot of guys in the community don't talk about, you know, even though it has one of the highest divorce rates, you know? Mm-hmm. So, well, listen, man, I really appreciated your time on this. This is outstanding. Pat, we're going to have all this in show notes and everything, but where would you like people to contact you? And what are you promoting, anything currently that you'd like people to be aware of?
Well, not promoting anything currently, except for my YouTube channel's grown quite a bit recently, and that's Pat Mac, PATMAC, Pat Mac YouTube channel. Most everything in regards to me is TMAX Inc., TMACSINC. And then, you know, CJ Ortiz and I work on this project together, the University of Badassery.
Yeah.
So that's a cool project that we have together. There's podcasts there. There's we have an online coaching squad. I do the Pat Mac Keep the Blaze coaching squad on Patreon. So yeah, there's 500 people on there.
And where would people, like, you talked about the fact that you will do privates once in a while. I got a lot of people that do like to do things like that, you know, bring their son or bring somebody like that. What's the best way for them to contact?
Email.
You? Okay, cool.
Mac@tmaxinc.com. Yep.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll make sure all that's there. Hey, thank you so much for your time, brother, and all the best and best to you and your wife. And hope if you come out Vegas way, please let us know.
Right on, Tim. Thank you for having me on your show. You were a very good host and moderator.
Thanks. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed that as much as I enjoyed interviewing Pat. You have all his information in the show notes below. Definitely check him out. Check out his podcast, University of Badassery. You got his IG right up there. Just a good dude. Just all around good dude. If you've not experienced him, he is definitely worth checking out. Now, thank you guys for all the support. Please continue to subscribe. Get your friends to subscribe to the channel. Hit the notification bell. And if you are ready to put your self-protection plan together, please go to timlarkin.com. Give us your email and you will start a masterclass right away that gives you free information on exactly how to put together a self-protection plan for you and your family to minimize the chance of violence. All the best. Stay safe.